This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and I'm here today with Neil Cholet, VP of Innovation at Oracle. Hi, Neil.
Hi, my name is Neil Cholet, Vice President of Innovation for Oracle.
Oracle Next is an innovation process that Oracle uses to take prospects and clients through. Can you share a little bit more about what it is?
First thing I'd say is we refer to it as a co-innovation process because it's something we do with the client, not for the client. The process has essentially been built from a number of existing techniques like human-centered design, service design, and design thinking. We've developed our own co-innovation process, which has five distinct stages. Those stages are, first, we frame the challenge. We really seek to understand what that challenge is and what the impact it's going to have on the business, and try and get some measurable data around how we'll know if we've met that challenge or not. The second stage is ideation. You then move into the ideation of trying to come up with solutions that will address that particular challenge. Once you've ideated, you move to the third stage, which is you want to take those ideas and you want to share them. The third stage is sharing. And the reason you share them is you want to validate if those ideas are good or bad in some way. And you get some data. Then you move into what we think is the most critical stage, which is test. So you actually go to a live test, and this is testing with employees or end users and actually getting real market data so you can verify whether that idea can be done on a repeatable basis. And then finally, if the test goes well, you go to the final stage, which is scaling of the idea into full market launch.
If you look at service design, they have a kind of stage which is prototyping. Where do you include that with an ideation?
No, the actual build out of the prototype is share. So that's where you would take one or more ideas from the idea stage and you'd build some kind of prototype. Sometimes we do videos, sometimes we do just wireframe mock-ups, but more often than not, we'll build a real, in fact, this is why I tend to not use the word prototype, a real pilot. So something actually working on a real cloud with real data, real backend integrations. But it happens at the share stage.
Going back to that first stage, the framing the challenge, what kind of challenges do you look at?
We get a real mix. So we've worked with a truck manufacturer. We've worked with companies like Maersk. Theirs was really around business model reinvention. So we spent 5 weeks just framing a new business model that they wanted to launch. Mostly it's around launches of new experiences, building something like a whole new experience around, for example, we just did a project recently with one of the local governments in Italy around e-voting and applying blockchain to allow a very trusted and secure voting application. Occasionally, it's actual product launch, so the development of a product.
This process, I understand that Oracle don't actually charge for it.
There's two things. First of all, the actual process, we open source it. You can go to designingcx.com, and all of the canvases, the templates, that process is completely published there. Many people think we're crazy for open sourcing this, but it's built on techniques that have been around in the community for years. Now, in terms of the engagement, when we go and co-innovate with a client, we charge for only certain aspects. If someone only wants to do the framing and ideation, we don't charge for that. If they want to go through to test, we do actually charge for the build of the pilot. But it's a very, very small, we're typically talking somewhere in the region of 20 to 30K. So it's not enough that it would break the bank, but it's enough that they place value in that. The first 1 to 3 stages we don't charge for. It's only once they go beyond stage 3 that we start charging.
You're obviously using Oracle technology and that cloud technology to do that pilot. At what point do you cost up? Because if you've got an idea and you think, yeah, we think this works, we've done the research, how do you work out what the cost benefits are going to be? And how do you work out what the cost of the pilot is going to be?
There's two levels. In terms of working out the benefits for the customer, we start that right from framing. We have different profiles of people in the teams. We have user experience designers, digital architects, business innovation directors. So these are the people who are very steeped in design thinking and service design. We then have this role of a business modeler, who tend to be kind of ex-McKinsey Bain types. Their job is to take all the data from the pilots or from the existing solutions and do discovery interviews, ethnography interviews, and even do things like mystery guest. And they take all that data and they'll build the business case to help what we call the intrapreneur, the person with the idea in the client. When they go and take that idea to their stakeholders, their board, we equip them with enough data and a business case to get their idea. It's what we call permission to proceed. So if you're asking, how do we size the pilot? We don't. What we do is we say, you're going to get a maximum of 10 weeks sprint time. We're going to provide you enough Oracle Cloud licenses that you can build that on. to this date, we've never worked on a project that required so many licenses that we ended up going over about 10 weeks sprint time. So we don't size the pilots. We just say you've got 10 weeks and we'll do whatever we can within that 10 weeks.
You're talking about roles within the team. Is that within the Oracle team? And what about the roles within the customer team?
The roles that I mentioned are within the Oracle team. Within the customer team, it really depends on the level of maturity and commitment from the customer. We have some customers who are very, very steeped in things like agile and design thinking, and they bring their own designers to the projects, and we work collaboratively with them, and their solution designers and architects will work with our architects. Conversely, we have some customers who really don't understand agile, don't understand design thinking, but what we do is we insist on them providing the concept of what we'd call a product owner. That would be the person who would attend the daily stand-up calls and would be constantly involved in that 10-week sprint. It really, really varies. We can go everything from every single one of our roles is matched up to the same role within the client to us taking on everything, but we insist on having a product owner and a sponsor for every single engagement we do.
You mentioned calls. Does that mean it's a remote team or do you work on site?
We do both. First of all, before we'll even invest in an engagement, we do very thorough scoping. So we'll sit down with the client and we'll scope the duration, the KPIs, what good looks like. And we'll even do things like writing a little mini press release. So everyone has very, very clear agreement around what good looks like. Assuming we pass the scoping, and scoping typically takes anywhere between 1 and 3 hours. Then we do the framing and ideation workshop. Usually they're combined. They can take anywhere from 2 days to 5 days. That is always done physically on site. It has to be done in person. Once we've kicked off the framing and ideation and then we've selected use cases, it then becomes probably 60% remote, 40% in person. We have teams all over. So the user experience team are split between Bucharest and Bangalore. Then the architects and the business innovation directors and modelers, they're all over. We have them in Vienna, Zurich, Portland, Oregon, all over. And I can talk, if you want, about how we blend the teams and how we form sprint teams as well. It's a mixture of remote and on-site.
Coming back to the challenges, do companies know what the questions are they need to ask?
It's very rare. In fact, sometimes they have an idea, but no more. If I take the example of Melia Hotels, where we worked with them, when we first met the chief digital officer, the challenge or the problem that they had is that their COO had been to Disney World and they had these magic bracelets. And he said, look, I want the first connected guest experience in the industry. That was it. No more. So we started with that as a challenge. And what we did in framing is we said, OK, let's look at your competitive environment. Let's look at your segmentation model. But let's look at also, what does a connected guest experience mean? It's this kind of thing where you just keep asking why 5 times until they really, really get to the heart of what that challenge is. It's often the case that they have an idea or a vision as to what they want to do, but they don't have the 15 layers that come underneath it. That's what comes out in framing. And framing is so important. Most of our clients want to go straight into ideation, and we pull them back kicking and screaming and saying, no, let's spend a day framing before you ideate. And if you do very good quality framing, we find the quality of the ideas and the number that actually make it through to test and then scale really goes up.
Using that Melia example, must have been some things that come out there where Oracle has a big technology stack and it must help, and you can tell how it did help, but there must be things outside of the Oracle family where you have to go to other third parties to bring in that technology.
Absolutely, yeah. So in the case of Melia, one of the things we very quickly agreed was, how would you have a connected guest experience? And they chose this idea of having a bracelet which has an NFC Bluetooth chip embedded in it. Now, Oracle doesn't provide that technology. Part of the challenge was we would have to identify a third-party company who would provide that and provide some kind of API where we could integrate that into our back-end cloud service. One of the use cases that was developed in ideation was, could we integrate to our point of sale system? Because Oracle actually provides point of sale systems and property management systems to a lot of hotels and restaurants. Even things like integrating to espresso machines in the room. Clearly, Oracle doesn't provide espresso machines. But yes, it's very often the case that some of the ideas cannot be fulfilled by Oracle technology. And either we or the client or together will go and find partners who can do that.
Where does the Oracle tech stack come in on these things normally?
In the ideation, sometimes ideas will come up or challenges will come up which technology can't solve. These are cultural things. And we'll capture those and we'll work on them, because they're important. But the wonderful thing about the Oracle Cloud Portfolio is it's very, very wide. We have probably the most diverse cloud portfolio in the market. There are very, very few technology challenges that we can't solve. So if it's an integration challenge, we've got one of those. If it's a mobile, we've got one of those. If it's blockchain, we've got one of those. Where the Oracle technology comes in is, do we have a technology that can solve that particular challenge? And usually we've got one of those. And if not, we've got a partner ecosystem and a startup accelerator ecosystem that can fill it. The types of technologies that get most commonly used are things like customer experience, Internet of Things, good old-fashioned integration technologies, a lot of HR and human capital management, and mobility comes up quite a lot as well. Lately, it's been a lot of data integration, data management, machine learning, and natural language processing as well.
The companies you mentioned so far are generally larger enterprises, but the process, I assume, works in SMEs, startups, and mid-sized enterprises. That's where the open source, one assumes, comes in. Do you offer any services around it to support those smaller companies who don't necessarily have the 20,000 budget?
About a third of the engagements we work on are not what we call consider tier one or tier two accounts. For example, we're working with Turning Point in the UK, who are a registered charity that provides support for people with mental illnesses or socially excluded. Not a large company, very, very small IT budgets. We wouldn't charge them a lot, but they would be not considered a large organization, but we are working with them. Conversely, we're working with companies like Unilever and Volvo and DP World. So about a third of our engagements are for non-tier one and tier two accounts. We use exactly the same process and exactly the same technology.
I'm seeing more and more companies adopt service design and design thinking. Are people adopting Oracle Next as well? Or is there a conflict between the two or an overlap?
Oracle Next, of course, is based on the principles of service design and human-centered design. There's potentially two ways I can answer your question. So are clients that we're working with adopting service design and design thinking as a principle, as a skill set? Absolutely. I'm working with clients like BBVA Bank, who have 400 people in their design team. And actually, they could teach Oracle about service design. So yes, we are definitely seeing that. Now, in terms of people adopting Oracle Next, one of the questions we get quite a lot is when we go in and do what we call inspire sessions. So before we've actually found a challenge, we'll just go in and just tell stories of real engagements to see if a customer wants to work with us. We are very often being asked, how did you set up Oracle Next? How did you set up the team? What are the roles? How do you compensate them? How do you organize them? How do you integrate them into the rest of Oracle? And what I realized about 9-10 months ago is they're actually asking us, how do you build an innovation team? And we never realized this, that the 2-3 years we've invested in building an innovation team in Oracle Next, there's value in that. What we started doing informally is working with some of our clients who either have innovation labs and teams that are having a very low hit rate in terms of getting their ideas executed in the market, or in regions like the Middle East and Central and Eastern Europe and Africa, where they haven't set up innovation teams, we're helping them do that. We recently launched a new service, which is essentially an innovation accelerator, where we will go in and we will help them identify the profiles of people that they should be recruiting to build their innovation team, but we don't get involved in the recruitment process. We will then train them on things like Scrum, Agile, design thinking. We will certify them on the Oracle Next co-innovation process. We have this thing called a playroom wall, which is where our next co-innovation process is physically manifested on a wall, which has a whiteboard and it's magnetic. So we'll actually install one of those in their physical space. We'll then give them an access to a set of cloud credits, and then we'll run through a minimum of 2 frame and ideate workshops, and we'll take 2 of the ideas and handhold them and get those ideas physically prototyped, piloted, and in the market. So that's a service that we've just started offering as a package. We do charge for that because you can imagine it's a lot of investment. Compared to what the digital agencies and digital management consultancy firms would charge, which is typically millions, we are very, very competitive. We've just started offering that because it seems there are companies out there that still need help in building out these innovation teams and labs.
What are the biggest challenges faced by those companies internally? Because service design, read a book, sounds brilliant, must work, but actually it's not easy to get across the line, is it, in their business?
The number 2 inhibitors to innovation we see in clients are, and they've changed, it used to be culture, which is an umbrella term. That's now number 2. Number 1 is politics and turf wars. Because we take a lot of data on these engagements and we ask, do you go for having a standalone digital business unit in some wonderful warehouse in Hoxton Square somewhere, or do you embed that team into every line of business? I tend to favour the latter, but sometimes having a separate standalone innovation team or digital business unit gives you clarity, gives you focus, but at some point you have to absorb that back into the mothership. But yeah, it's the cultural and the political turf wars that are really inhibiting innovation.
It's interesting you say that, because in Mark Stickton's book, he views that service design thinking should be embedded through the whole organisation, ideally. But the most important thing is to actually have a working space for design thinking or service design. With the whiteboard, that's what you've got in your playroom. It's a space that you can then draw the rest of the organisation in. In some ways, you want to do almost as a stealth operation first and get a few successes under your belt.
You're absolutely right. I go into so many clients and partners who have these wonderful innovation labs that have technology showcases. And after 6 months when they're launched, I go in and I run my finger over it and there's a thick layer of dust. All you need is a physical space where people can come in and ideate and do something with it. What we do is when we work with clients and with Oracle, we take the innovators, but we encourage them to get people from other lines of business to be seconded to work for 6, 8, 9, 12 weeks on a live engagement. So when we train people on our co-innovation methodology, we say, you've not actually been trained, you've been exposed. You immediately have to work on a live cycle. And once you've been on somewhere between 2 to 5 live cycles, then you become really proficient. So for us, it's exactly what you said. Just give people the space to take their ideas and execute them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.